you know that? The culture there is, the ethics behind that are, sit back and be thoughtful with some of our highlighted interviews on Moncrief.
Ring, ring on the bicycle, beep, beep in the car, ping, ping, a submarine, phew, phew,
helicopter. Sorry, every time I do that now, I get this Pavlovian response from the team. They all start jerking their head along. David Carey is with us for our parenting slot. What I played there was this little tune that's been devised by Cowan Gate, who make baby formula, and a musician called Imogen Heap. Scientifically devised to be a tune that babies will love.
It appears that everyone on the production team must be a baby.
That's all I could infer from that. Anyway, on to more serious concerns. My query concerns my 12-year-old daughter, who's very anxious and frequently upset about her height. She's 4'5" tall and the smallest girl in her class. No amount of reassurance can convince her that everyone grows at a different rate and she too will grow in time. She has always been a quiet child and lacking in confidence. She's bright at school but a perfectionist and usually self-deprecating about her achievements. Is this constant worry about her height part of a deeper tendency towards anxiety? How can I help her be more positive and not get bogged down with worries? Many thanks for your advice.
A couple of things I want to say here. I can't say whether it's part of a deeper tendency towards anxiety. I don't know the child. Is that possible? Yes. However, it could be very focused and fixated simply on height. Now, the key word here is reassurance. No amount of reassurance helps, and absolutely that is the case for the overanxious child who tends to ruminate about a particular problem. Do not reassure. There's a simple couple of steps you can take. First, pause, freeze, don't do anything. Second, take a couple of deep, lovely, well-controlled belly breaths with the child. Third, let her know that worry is a normal thing, it is a feeling, and all people have worries. Mm. Worry serves a purpose. It prevents us from harm. Now, the reality is, by the way, that your height is 80% heritable, meaning how tall the parents are will be very influential in how tall the 12-year-old child will grow to. So now that allows for 20% variance, of course.
Yeah.
However, 80% more likely, but that's not going to mean much to her. You might ask her, what's the worst thing about being small? Because it's very helpful to permit children to unpack their worry rather than to simply reassure there is nothing to worry about. Worries are real. It's in her head. Telling her there's nothing to worry about isn't going to knock the worry out of her head. Why is that? Because worries arise from deep emotional centers in the human brain that do not connect immediately or efficiently with the logical centers of the human brain. So when you try to use logic, you're talking to the part of the brain that isn't particularly active at the time. Therefore, you might as well be talking to the wall. It just doesn't work. It would be interesting to find out, and mom can do this and or dad, what's the worst thing about being short? What could possibly happen when you're short? Get her to unpack it a little bit. Tell her you are there to help, that she can talk about her worries sometimes. Children who worry excessively can really be helped by having a worry box at home. How do you make a worry box? You get an old tissue box. You ask the child to decorate it because we're going to make a worry box, and a worry box, honey, helps you control your worries. So now the child decorates the tissue box. As often as the child wishes, they can write a worry down on a piece of paper and put it in the worry box. Once a day, and only once a day, for 15 minutes, the child may take a worry out of the worry box and discuss it with mom, dad, Nana, or whoever, some caring adult that's close to the child. 15 minutes only. We don't use reassurance. We unpack the worry. We help the child recognize that worrying is normal. We help them learn to breathe properly and to relax their muscles for 2 to 3 minutes at a time, because that's a beautiful exercise to do to help the body rid itself of excessive stress. Now, there's more to it than that, but that's the short course in how to deal with children who have excessive rumination about a worrying thing. It isn't always a sign of a budding nascent anxiety disorder. Her worry is real. She's the shortest in the class. She sees that. Hmm. Everyone else sees that. I wonder if age 12, if she is starting to reach puberty, or has she not, and many of the other girls have. That can be an additional worry for girls and or boys. Girls typically reach puberty a little bit younger than boys these days. And so there's a lot of reality things that I'd like to find out about what this little girl is concerned about. You can knock this one on the head pretty carefully. Parents, when you have a child who's ruminating and worry, do the worry box. Works a charm. Very often, Sean, we inadvertently increase worries by paying far too much attention to them and providing far too much reassurance and nurturing at the time of the worry. Any behavior, when it's reinforced, particularly with parental kindness, hugs, kisses, and lots of nice chat, will increase in frequency.
Yes.
That's why we use the worry box. Let's put some controls on this. You have to validate her worry also, Mom. You need to say, I know it isn't easy. I know worrying about how tall you are can be a bit scary. It can be discouraging at times. I know it's hard for you, honey. Validate her worries. Teach a breathing exercise. Use the worry box. Don't inadvertently reinforce it. And remember, reassurance is not the answer.
Then on a similar note, can David give any tips on this recent crazy clown thing? My 11-year-old is terrified and having trouble sleeping. Are you aware of this clown thing?
I am, because it appears on the news every now and then, which I read online. And so, yes, I am worried. I'm not worried. There we go. I am aware of the crazy clown thing. Interestingly, I recently was chatting with a girl who went to one of the Dublin schools where the crazy clowns inadvertently appeared, maybe inadvertently, who the hell knows. And it had caused a lot of upset, apparently, on that campus, a lot. I don't know what the genesis of this crazy clown business is, but there is a clown phobia, by the way. I can't think of the exact name.
Cowlophobia.
Cowlophobia. Yeah. Thank you very much indeed.
How did I even know that? Presenting the show must have had some benefits.
Probably. Yeah. Let's hope so. Yeah. Again, same thing. Mm. Use the same process. Don't get hooked into talking about it constantly. There's a dynamic going on out there. Instant access to children of bad news is very troubling to them. Very troubling. I have had, in the last 2 weeks, 4 children in the office with very serious anxiety, worrying about ISIS, worrying about possible terrorist attacks, talking about France and Belgium, and it's causing them a lot of distress. I think we just are living in an age when we are subject to instantaneous bad news. Not good for any of us.
No.
And confusing for children.
Yeah. Though this clown thing is, you know, it is a stunt. I mean, it's scary clowns appearing. It started in the States. And, by an amazing coincidence, there was always somebody with a really good high-definition camera just beside them to film them.
Isn't that something?
And it's one of these kind of tropes that go around the internet for a while and scare teenagers.
Yeah.
I can remember with one of my own daughters a few years ago, what was going around was that Rihanna was a member of the Illuminati. And the reason why she was a member, I think it was Rihanna, was one of them anyway. In some video, there were symbols on the wall and they were Illuminati symbols. And there were these YouTube videos of people giving long analyses of this Rihanna and what she was really saying. And I remember my daughter at one point saying, "Will you go and talk to my friend? Because I'm seen as the kind of serial debunker of everything." So I just sit down with a friend and go, "This is nonsense." But once they get it in their heads, it's very hard to get it out. And it does genuinely scare them.
It does genuinely scare them. And I think it raises another point here. Are we permitting and allowing younger children far too much time on their smartphones, etc.? They're all into YouTube. Mm. That's the big thing that they're watching. I think we need more supervision about technology in the family home, which should start very young, by the way, and most often doesn't. And then it generates into huge problems when you try to restrict it later on. So again, far too much access to unpleasant, scary, frightening things for young children. The only way out, excuse me, is to use the method I was suggesting.
Yeah. I was diagnosed with cancer 10 years ago. I'm doing well now and have 2 children under 3. I still go for checkups, but there is always the possibility that it could return. Should I bring my kids up knowing that I was once sick, or should I not mention it unless something happens?
Well, this is a difficult one. I don't actually think you should mention it now, to be honest. I see no need. You're in good health. You're in remission, apparently, thanks be to God. And the children are happy and well-adjusted. Why introduce the element of possible mortality into the minds of young children when they don't need it?
Yeah.
I don't see any reason to do that.
Yeah.
Now, there may be some of our listeners who think differently, and I'd welcome other opinions. But given the fact that you are in excellent health, and there's no reason, excuse me, for the children to think you're not, I wouldn't introduce it.
Yeah, because I suppose it's I don't know, if a doctor has given them a percentage chance that they might return,
yeah.
I suppose that's a factor. But then it's if they're in remission and everything looks okay, it's kind of like saying, I might get hit by a bus at some point.
Yeah, the children
why worry them?
Well, exactly. The children are all under 3. The cancer occurred 10 years ago, so they weren't even born yet.
Yeah.
So all they know of you is healthy you. And long may that continue, by the way. My advice would be there's no need to tell them now. Don't create a problem that doesn't exist at the moment.
Yeah. My 11-year-old son was recently diagnosed with dyspraxia, which means social skills are a problem area. He does not initiate conversation very well, therefore does not make friends easily, and does not have any play ideas of his own, which means my husband and I are involved in his play date more than we would like. We don't want to embarrass him by being involved in playtime as much, although he is oblivious. He manages to say the wrong thing at the wrong time and always comes out the worse off in situations. He is physically struggling with sports, and his road buddies of the same age are obsessed with football, which he cannot keep up with. He is in martial arts for coordination and in scouts about 5 years, but he still doesn't have any friends in either. What should we do?
Well, let's talk to school and find out what kind of support program is in place for a child with a genuine educational disability. Social skills can be taught. Mm-hmm. They can be learned. Play skills can be taught and can be learned. The best way to do that sometimes is in school. We have a very rich social, personal, and health education program in our primary curriculum. We have a drama program. We have a good PE program. All of these can be adapted to help children with dyspraxia, which is also sometimes called developmental coordination disorder. And our parent here has listed all the major characteristics of the difficulty. It does have profound impact on social relationships as well as learning abilities sometimes, but not always. We have on the website, I believe, put up the number of the Dyspraxia Ireland Association.
We have.
Just ring it. That's a helpline. You can let them know that I suggested you call. They are absolutely wonderful. They have access to special groups for children. There's even a soccer team for children with dyspraxia, believe it or not.
Mm.
So there's a lot that can be done here. Reach out. Get some advice. Don't hesitate. Talk to school. Let's find out what kind of support program is in place, because one should be in place. There should be an individual educational plan or program written for this boy, which addresses the key areas of concern.
The phone number for the Dyspraxia Ireland support is 01-874-7085, 874-7085. We have a question about twins up next, which is actually, funny enough, rare enough on this slot. 53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cent. You can follow us on Facebook or Twitter, or send us an email to afternoon@newstalk.com. We did have a question in for David Carey about a little girl who, she's only 12, but she's, you know, a bit concerned that... She's not the tallest person in her class. In fact, she's the shortest person in her class. Someone on Twitter says Marie Curie wasn't tall. Didn't hold her back from winning the Nobel Peace Prize. Someone else says, if height or lack of causes anxiety or loss of power, she will find power in some other area of her life. And hopefully that will be the case. Paddy in Sandyford says, when I was 9 years of old in 1991, a girl in my class had heard her mother worrying about the Gulf War. She came into class and said that planes were going to bomb Ireland. I will never forget the terror I felt that day as an already anxious kid. I know it's easy to say this is a modern day phenomenon, but it's been around a while. I can definitely vouch for that.
Well, I think Paddy is correct. I am old enough to remember the era of duck and cover. Do you remember what docket, right?
That was, hide under your desk in case of a nuclear attack.
Exactly, exactly. Now, it didn't unduly unnerve me or anyone I know, but I'm just trying to illustrate the point that Patty is right. This has been around a long time. The world is filled with possible dangers and things that can hurt us. Our brain is primitive. It always wants us to stay alive and try to protect us from dangerous things. So we'll quickly go into stress mode whenever that happens. Mm. That's an adaptive response. That is a healthy response. Only when it spirals out of control and it becomes all a young person or adult can think about is it a problem.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes when I'm dealing with an issue with my children, I think, what would David Carey say? Says Craig.
Well, that's very nice. But David Carey doesn't have all the answers, that's for sure.
We have 4-year-old identical twin girls. They are bright, lively, outgoing and attending preschool. A year ago, they witnessed the family pet dog killed on the road. Ooh. We talked the accident through with the girls and answered their questions. One of the girls continues to talk about it and regularly says that she's feeling sad. We have since got a new dog and they were involved in the choice. We would consider her a sensitive child as she worries and gets upset easily, especially when corrected. Can David give some advice on what we should say when she says, I'm just a bit sad today?
Well, I think we've already underscored some of the ways and methods you can use to help the over-anxious child. This is a horrible trauma to witness. Mm. The death of your beloved pet in an accident on the road. Obviously, this little girl, being the more sensitive of the two, is having more difficulty getting over it. She says, I'm just a bit sad today. Well, there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, I think I'm really happy that she's able to articulate it. Because the more she can say it, the less she has to internalize it. And when we compact these things down year after year after year, that's when we develop stress symptoms later in life, health symptoms, for example. So this is a positive thing. I'm just a bit sad. Just say to her, honey, sometimes people do feel sad. What are you thinking about that's sad? Well, she's probably thinking about the little dog. Validate her feeling. Yes, that was a horrible thing. Now we have a new puppy, and I'm sure you'll learn to love it. And, you know, we'll just try to move on and protect you from the sad days as best we can. But don't overindulge the sad day talk. I think what you need, again, is the focus. 15 minutes, maximum time a day, to talk about a worry or a sadness. Validate the feeling. Again, the deep breath. Give her time to be alone. Ask her what she does or what she can do to help her feel less sad. Not to help her feel happy, because if you're having a sad day, you're going to have a sad day. Mm. It's a human feeling. We all have them. So we don't want to have our feelings denied by having someone say, it'll be okay, or even worse, oh, just smile. Come on, put a smile on your face. I think that's so damaging.
Yeah.
When people do that, not just to children, but to one another. You know, oh, it's not that bad. Come on, just smile.
Yeah, I hate that when people say it might never happen. How do you know it? Probably has happened.
Well, exactly. Exactly. So I think just taking her a little bit longer, she has her sad days, you will find that this will dissipate over time and she'll be fine.
Yeah. It's interesting, though, that they're twins and they have quite different reactions.
Isn't that so? They are identical twins, so they're sharing the exact same DNA. However, they're both being reared in a slightly different way in the family. One is very confident. One is the sensitive one.
Yeah.
Inevitably, both parents, if there are two at home, have interacted with the sensitive child slightly differently than they have with the very confident child.
And you wouldn't even be aware of it, I suppose.
You would not be aware of it. Yeah. And that is the nature. That's the nurture part of the nature.
Yes. My 8-year-old son gets involved in football and rugby training, but when there is a match, he stands at the edge of the game and won't get involved in the match. Is there any way to encourage him to get involved?
Gosh, isn't this a job for the coach?
Yeah.
As opposed to the parents, have a word with the coach and ask coach if he or she has noticed that the boy is a little bit hesitant, and ask him to encourage the boy to get involved in some way. The best way to get involved when you're a little bit nervous about getting involved, maybe the little boy doesn't think he has the right skills yet. He must have some skills. Ask coach to put him in to practice some skill that he has. Or if he is particularly adept at a particular skill, have that 8-year-old boy teach it to a couple of other young lads, this will build his confidence.
Mm. Yeah, because it seems like he'll get involved in training, but not in actual matches. And maybe there's something about actual matches he doesn't like.
Well, of course, that's high stakes there now. I mean, actual matches are competitive, and you don't want to be the one that, messes up the match and causes the other side to score a try because it was your fault. So there is natural hesitancy there. Mm. I think we need some confidence-building exercises here on the football pitch for this boy. In my view, those are best engineered by the coach or coaches rather than the parents themselves.
My 10-year-old son keeps on biting nails. He does it everywhere and he won't stop no matter what I do. It's a habit that I hate and tell him it's a bad habit and that he shouldn't do it. Are there any tricks for this? I have tried the bad tasting nail varnish, but nothing seems to work. Any advice would be great.
Well, you've got to stop telling him it's a habit, you hate it, and it's a bad habit. That's step number one.
Yeah.
Control your own emotions and remain calm. It is a self-soothing exercise, nail biting, thumb sucking, all these kinds of little symptoms, hair twisting, or whatnot. So maybe some questioning about, do you ever worry about things? What's on your mind? How does it really feel when you bite your nails? Do you know you're doing it? Some children bite their fingernails and they don't even know what's happening. Many people grow up to be quite functional adults with good social skills, successful living, successful occupations, and are nail biters.
Yeah.
So it isn't necessarily a doomsday scenario for this little boy. I would suggest throttling back a little bit on all the intervention about the nail biting, because all you're doing is drawing more attention to it. He is well aware, you can be 100% sure, of your disapproval. And that probably is only making him a little more upset and a little more anxious.
Might be, which makes him in turn bite his nails.
Bite his nails even more. Yeah.
My 9-year-old son is insisting upon sleeping with myself and my partner. He's an only child. Up to 6 months ago, he would chance his arm each night to get into the bed. Now he insists. We play games that we should play musical beds and take turns, but it's suggested that my boyfriend who moves, we are all very close, a close unit, and include my son in most things. But he is clingy and doesn't like us having a social life or doing anything without him. Is it unusual at that age? And any advice on how to break the habit without breaking hearts?
Yeah, it's time to take charge. You're the parent. Since when does the 9-year-old get to insist on the sleeping arrangements of the parents? That shouldn't be allowed. He's 9. It's time to play a little tough here. Back to your bed. You might have to do that 20 times the first 2 nights, but eventually he'll get the notion. You are in charge of the child. He's not in charge of you. Take control, parents. Mm. Don't let this happen.
Now, just the way it's phrased, and I may be reading too much into it, it's suggested that my boyfriend who moves, not his father. So that might not be the same person, and I wonder, might that be a factor?
Well, it certainly could be a factor, but we don't know enough yet. This could be the psychological movement of the child to separate mother from boyfriend.
Yeah.
Who is or who has replaced the father, but we don't know enough now. Is he having any contact with his father? What was the relationship? How long ago did any of this happen? If we knew more, we could dig a little deeper. The real issue here is 9-year-old boys, 9-year-old girls shouldn't be sleeping with their mommies and daddies or their mommies and their partner or vice versa. And so you really have to start insisting, no, we won't have that. Mommy and John, our partners, we share the room. You have to go into your own bed now, son.
Assumpta says, I was one of those very sensitive people, still am at 65. It makes life so hard. And it is one of those, it can be one of those nurture things. And I suppose you have to accept and learn about yourself. And Jerry says, I remember as a child, this is going back to the some of the children are nervous about things they see happening in the world. I remember as a child being told by another child about the third secret of Fatima. Didn't sleep for a week, says Jerry.
Jerry,
I wonder what he told you about it.
Jerry, are you over it now? That's what I want to know.
Well, I think they revealed it in 2000, what the third secret was.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that it was the attempted assassination of John Paul II. That's what it was about.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah, but it was after the attempted assassination. You'd think they would have told it beforehand. I thought that was...
Listen in every Wednesday at 3 p.m. here on Moncrief for more parenting advice from David Carey.